Good afternoon. I call this remote meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order, and I'll ask Mr. Brown to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cortese Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Here.
Representative Barr.
Present.
Representative Carlson.
Present.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Haley. Representative Cagle.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lilly. Representative Liz Lagarde, excused. Representative Lucero. Representative Olson. Representative Farr.
Here.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Richardson. Representative Tice.
Present.
Representative Haley. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Olson.
Kent.
Thank you. Representative Richardson.
Present.
Thank you. And I see Representative Haley just joined us.
Present. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lucero, present.
Thank you.
Well, we have a quorum. Our first item of business today is approval of our minutes from February 16th. Representative Cortese Watoon, do you have a motion to approve the minutes?
I would move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cortese Watoon moves our minutes from February 16th. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the minutes from February 16th, 2021 are adopted. Members, we have one bill on the agenda today, but it is a momentous one. Today is a historic day for this committee and for this legislature. For the first time in the history of the Minnesota House, a committee will consider the legalization of adult use cannabis. And I hope and expect that at the end of this hearing, for the first time in the history of the Minnesota legislature, we will advance that bill out of this committee. I want to give a brief roadmap for what today's hearing will look like. There has been, as you would expect, substantial public interest in this bill and in testifying today. So the first 45 minutes of the hearing will be reserved for testimony to the bill, first by the bill author and then by the public. After we get through 45 minutes of testimony, we will move on to amendments, considering amendments and member discussion and questions. We will do that even if we haven't gotten through all of the members of the public who signed up for the bill. It just isn't possible to get through everyone. During the public testimony portion, a couple other additional rules. One, I'd like to ask all members of the public to limit their remarks to 2 minutes, and that will allow a maximum number of people to participate in the process. You will notice a little chat window pop up when you have 15 seconds left, and you'll be warned again when you get to 2 minutes. And if you continue to speak, then I'll gently advise you to wrap things up so that we can make sure that everyone who we can fit in has an opportunity to speak. So please do try and keep it to 2 minutes. We will also alternate back and forth between supporters of the measure and opponents to the measure. After we get out of the initial presentation of the bill, and Representative Winkler has a few testifiers that he's brought along with him to present the bill. So after we get through those testifiers, we will alternate. Last, I'd like members of the public to limit their testimony to the provisions in the bill that relate to the jurisdiction of the Commerce Committee. That's a pretty broad charge because a big chunk of the bill relating to the regulation of adult use cannabis falls under the jurisdiction of the Commerce Committee. But please don't go into talking too far abroad about issues outside that. And we'll also ask members to keep their questions and amendments within the jurisdiction of the committee. So having laid those expectations for how we will proceed, we will move on to the consideration of House File 600. And to start that discussion, I will move House File 600 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy. And with that, I will turn the floor over to the Majority Leader, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee taking time today to consider this bill. While we could spend hours discussing the commerce implications of this bill in front of this committee, I want to assure you that on the many, many committee stops that this bill has in front of us, there's a very good likelihood that you will see the bill more than once, and we will consider issues that relate to commerce but might be more properly discussed in committees like health, education, taxes, and local government and state government. So we have a lot of stops to make, a lot of discussion to have, and this is the first kickoff moment. The reason this bill is in front of you today, Mr. Chair and members, is because we have cannabis laws in place today that are doing more harm than good. Cannabis is widely consumed today in Minnesota. It is prevalent in every community in the state and widely available for people from youth to senior citizens. We have a medical program that currently exists, which is expensive and difficult for people to access. So we have a product that is available widely, but is regulated poorly. We have a product that for which we use the criminal justice system to use criminal penalties, sanctions, and policing in order to keep it out of the hands of the public at large. That system doesn't work and creates significant harms. Depending on which data you look at, African Americans in Minnesota are somewhere between 5 and 10 times more likely to be arrested and incarcerated for cannabis possession or cannabis-related crimes than white Minnesotans, despite the fact that use between the two groups is roughly the same. We have heard testimony and conversation around Minnesota about the relief that seniors and veterans get from cannabis, especially in comparison to other drugs that are prescription in nature for diseases like conditions like PTSD, cancer, and all sorts of pain-related ailments. Cannabis is a relief for very many people, and our medical program does not work very well. In addition to the racial inequities in our criminal justice approach to cannabis, we waste considerable resources on cannabis enforcement that could be better used elsewhere. And I say waste because it largely doesn't work. In the United States today, and there is every reason to believe this is true in Minnesota, something like two-thirds of adolescents say that cannabis is either easy or very easy to access. In addition to the fact that the system doesn't work very well and the harms that we create through the criminal justice system are unintended consequences, we have a system in which consumers do not know what they're getting because it is unregulated. The state has foregone considerable tax revenue because the marketplace is illegal. And in general, people feel that a product that can be used responsibly should be something that they are able to decide to use or not use. Cannabis is less dangerous than alcohol. Cannabis is less dangerous than tobacco. Both products, both of which are legal and regulated. So from multiple perspectives, from a health perspective, from a racial equity perspective, from a criminal justice reform perspective, from just being able to do a better job of regulating a product that can be used responsibly, it is time for Minnesota to change its cannabis laws. In addition to all of that, public opinion is changing significantly. Something like two-thirds of Americans and a similar number of Minnesotans believe that cannabis should be legalized for adult uses. When we have a product that is broadly supported for legalization and we are using the criminal sanctions of prison, parole, probation, and felony charges, which can last people's entire lives, to restrict access to it, we are doing a deep injustice. But as public opinion changes, in addition to undermining the credibility of the criminal approach to cannabis, we also are seeing more and more states legalizing. 15 states currently have full legalization in the United States. As that becomes more prevalent, the ability of law enforcement to keep cannabis out of the hands of Minnesotans will further diminish. It becomes too easy to get it from too many places that are legal where they purchased it for Minnesotans to take seriously any kind of criminal sanctions. I think you all probably know that in this last election in South Dakota, voters there overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump's reelection and overwhelmingly voted for cannabis legalization. So in addition to rising public support, legalization enjoys broad bipartisan support. So as we consider this bill today, take a look at amendments and have discussion. I want you on both sides to know that we are committed to passing a bill that addresses the failures of our current policy, but also addresses the concerns, the legitimate concerns raised by many people who are concerned about the effect of legalization. We are trying to get this right. That is why we had 15 town halls across Minnesota. That is why we've worked with dozens of legislators to put this policy together over 18 months. We've met with countless advocacy organizations. We've worked with every state agency that could touch on this bill. We've studied what has happened in other states, what has gone well and what has not gone well. And we believe that House File 600 represents the best foot forward Minnesota can possibly take on cannabis legalization. It is coming. It is time for us to get it right, and that's what this bill represents. It's not perfect, but I think through the work in this committee today, through the work with advocacy organizations and your input, we can make it better and move it towards final passage. Mr. Chair, I do have an author's amendment, and if you'd be willing to move that, I'd like to put that on the bill before proceeding with testimony.
Certainly, Leader Winkler, I will move the A3 amendment, which is an amendment that I understand gets the bill in the shape you wish the committee to consider it. I don't know if you have any other remarks to the A3.
Mr. Chair, the only thing I would say to the A3 is that it represents feedback provided by organizations and people since we drafted the bill and introduced it last session. So we make changes to the Cannabis Management Board to represent more people with a social justice background and organized labor. We make clear that the Clean Indoor Air Act is not affected by passage of this bill. And we make a number of other technical changes that I think put the bill in better shape based on the feedback we've received. And so I think with this amendment, and I should also say these amendments are based on our work here in the Commerce Committee. As we move to other committees, we expect to see other amendments addressing other issues we have had raised by both members of the House as well as advocacy organizations.
Any further discussion to the A3 author's amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the A3 is adopted. We will now move to testimony. I understand that Representative Winkler has four testifiers that he brought to help present the bill, so we'll do those four first. We will, since we took that amendment before the testimony, we'll start the clock on public testimony now and extend it for 40 minutes from now. So the first testifier is Leili Fatahi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Leili Fatahi, and I am the campaign manager for Minnesotans for Responsible Marijuana Regulation, or MRMR. And it's my pleasure today to testify in support of House File 600 as amended. MRMR is a statewide multi-partisan campaign organized by leaders from state and local units of government, a broad range of nonprofit organizations, members of Minnesota's business community, organized labor, and more. We formed MRMR with the goal of not just legalizing cannabis in Minnesota, but rather replacing and repairing the damage caused by the complete and utter failure that is cannabis prohibition with a well-regulated and inclusive cannabis industry that promotes consumer safety, creates diverse economic opportunities and jobs for Minnesotans across the state, and invests resources back into our communities, especially those that have been most disproportionately harmed by racist policies of prohibition and the war on drugs. Cannabis prohibition has failed to achieve every single one of its stated policy goals. It has failed to eliminate the sale and use of cannabis and instead driven it into an underground market that lacks consumer safety standards and is more readily accessible to children than tobacco or alcohol are. It has failed to keep our communities safer and healthier and instead has disenfranchised entire segments of our society from being able to access employment, housing, and other basic needs. Murmur supports House File 600 because it is a well-considered and inclusive approach to establishing a legal cannabis industry in Minnesota that prioritizes Minnesotans' safety and invests in Minnesotans' jobs, businesses, and communities. We are particularly supportive of this bill because we know that it was developed through what we see as the most extensive consultation and collaboration process with different stakeholder groups, with Minnesotans from across the state, and based on the most thorough research and assessment of policies from across the country that we've seen any other legislature do. Today, you're going to hear testimony from a range of individuals whose stories demonstrate the need for and the opportunity created by this bill. I urge you to especially listen closely to the commitment they share to serving the interests of our state and their communities. Thank you for your time, and I will turn it over to the other testifiers.
Thank you. The next testifier is Justin Carter. Mr. Carter.
Thank you. You guys hear me good?
We can.
All right, cool. Thank you. I am a supporter of this bill. This is kind of more of a ground, a boots on the ground aspect personally. I'm originally from South Minneapolis, graduated from Post Dunham High School. In 2001, 2004, I was convicted of a violent crime, sentenced to prison in Minnesota. Served my time, was released, completed parole, and was unable to get a job. Find a job at McDonald's because of my health. So in 2008, I moved to Denver, Colorado, because I had an opportunity to get into the cannabis industry, making $10 an hour as a stripper. I began that, worked hard, worked my way up in the industry. In 2010, I transferred over to a larger company right before the time where the laws changed and everything was legal. So I was there for metric coming into play. I was there for the whole development of camera systems. All of the regulations that came into cannabis, I lived in. So going through that whole time and going into, I had a child in this industry. I got my credit together. I started paying tax, became a tax-paying citizen. I didn't have that opportunity. So, you know what I mean? So from that point forward, I grew, got into management, went over into retail. I moved to back to Minnesota in 2017. My mother was sick. So I moved home to go take care of my mother. I consulted, moonlit as a consultant, still traveled to state in the industry. Then, as we all know, 2020 hit, COVID. Social unrest, civil unrest, and all that thing. Everything happened. This whole time, thanks to Marcus Harkins, I learned how to lobby. I learned how to, come up to the Capitol and talk to people and see what the deal was. Nothing happened. So here we are. I just took a job as a retail director of operations for a cannabis startup in Michigan. So, I had to sell my home in North Minneapolis, took my family, moved to Michigan, bought a home there, and am now, working and thriving as a retail operations manager for a cannabis company. As a black man with a background, I wish it could have been in Minnesota. I would have loved to work in the job I love, the industry I love, in Minnesota. I raised my family in Minneapolis, that's pretty much, I guess, what I have to bring to the table. It's just kind of putting that out there. As somebody that has went through ups and downs in the industry. I've seen the highs and lows. I've been all of the regulations, everything like that. And I built my family in cannabis. I'm going to retire in cannabis. And, if I got to retire in Michigan, so be it. But I would love to bring, this surge of income and energy that we have to Minnesota. I think we deserve it. Sucks for me to see every other state. I go consult in all these other states, around Minnesota, but I can't even have a joint in Minneapolis because I'm scared. So it gets frustrating. I this is an honor. I appreciate the time to be able to share that. I didn't know how far the timing was going to go. So I appreciate the time. I'll hang around for questions. I remember you, sir. It's my first time, but it's an honor. I appreciate it, guys. So thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Jessica Hauser. Ms. Hauser.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you to all the lawmakers, patients, caregivers, and consumers working hard to improve our medical cannabis and cannabis laws in Minnesota. And thank you to the business folks who are working hard to improve the laws here as well. My name is Jessica Hauser. I'm mom to Wyatt, the first patient registered with Minnesota's medical cannabis program. He's 8 years old and has been participating in the cannabis program since day one. Medical cannabis is a crucial part of his treatment for a rare form of epilepsy called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. He has seizures every day, but without medical cannabis, he would have more and they'd be much more intense. So cannabis is a game changer in improving the quality of his life. We spend an average of $200 per month on his cannabis. He is small and takes a relatively small dose 3 times a day. We have spent more than $10,000 on his treatment. So far, we've been fortunate, despite the fact that medical cannabis is not covered by insurance, to be able to cover this expense. This is not the case for so many patients in Minnesota. In 2016, a report by the Minnesota Department of Health's Office of Medical Cannabis, 86% of survey respondents indicated cost was a barrier to access. Patients in this situation are forced to turn to the black market, buy inferior products online, or forgo safe, effective treatment options altogether. So no Minnesotan should have to choose between the cost of their medicine and being a criminal or going without it. It's been nearly 7 years since the initial law passed in 2014. It's long past time to improve access to safe, affordable cannabis, including medical cannabis, in Minnesota. As Wyatt grows bigger, we'll need to increase his dose. This will increase the cost. He's already 15 pounds heavier than when he started, and we've been hesitant to make adjustments due to the expense. We have friends whose adult children's medical cannabis costs up to $1,000 per month. This is an impossible expense for so many people. Personally, we could never afford that. And what are we supposed to do if the costs don't come down through expanded access to cannabis? Minnesota needs to do better by the thousands of patients and consumers who can benefit from medical cannabis and improved cannabis laws. Thank you for your time in supporting HF 600 to improve access to safe and affordable cannabis to all Minnesotans.
Thank you. And then the last of the bill author testifiers is Stephen Egan. Mr. Egan.
Thank you, committee. Thank you for having me. First off, I'd like to say I'm a combat veteran. I've served multiple tours in both Afghanistan, Iraq, and some other undisclosed areas throughout my time in Joint Special Operations Command. I retired from the Army medically in 2015. And moved back to Minnesota specifically because of their medical cannabis program. It was my home state. It seemed like the right fit for me. I moved back here and I was unable to afford the program and had to turn to the illicit market in order to medicate myself properly. The military, you know, pushed tons of opiates and other types of medications on us once we retired out. And that was not the path that I wanted to go. Since then, I've become a cannabis consultant. I in cultivation, breeding, and extraction, post-processing, and polishing to include the testing regulations within that community nationwide. I've been to Oakland, South Carolina, Florida, you name it. I've been there consulting on the post-processing techniques. And it's time we bring those techniques to Minnesota. I shouldn't be able to, I shouldn't have to go out of state to provide funds for my family and also provide medication for myself in those states. It's imperative that people recognize the economic opportunity, not just for the businesses, but for the potential employees that come from that, all the way from entry-level positions to positions are available, from trimmers to technicians to chemists. It's all there. There's an opportunity for absolutely everyone. I've seen the changes across the country that this plant can bring, not just in people's lives, but in the economic conditions of these communities. It's imperative that we take advantage of that now, and especially now that we have the opportunity to see other states doing it and take the best practices and toss away the stuff that we don't need to use. That's all I have. I just want to express my appreciation for us getting the ball rolling and having this time.
Thank you, sir. We will now move to the public testimony. As a reminder, we'll be alternating between supporters and opponents of the bill. We have more supporters who signed up to testify, so at some point that will shift over. I'd ask each testifier to limit their comments to 2 minutes and watch for the timing. Also ask each testifier to state their name for the record at the outset of their testimony. The first public testifier is Maren Schroeder.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee. My name is Maren Schroeder, and I'm the Policy Director for Sensible Change Minnesota. I am not here today to give a statement on behalf of the organization. We submitted something in writing. Rather, I'm here to tell you why I got into cannabis advocacy and have worked the last 7 years on reforming Minnesota's cannabis laws. Several years ago, I was in a relationship with an abusive partner. He gaslit me, accusing me of everything from hiding the Xbox controller to having affairs with my boss. He was physically abusive, at one time hitting me over 30 times in the head. Even after that relationship ended, he followed me, called me, texted me. It was a never-ending cycle of terror. I developed severe PTSD. I was unable to sleep, became extremely paranoid about where and when he might reappear. Even today, over a decade later, I find myself with extreme anxiety some nights, probably tonight, fearful of what might happen after I go to sleep. Cannabis has become that medicine, the one that allows me to sleep, lowers my anxiety and panic to a manageable level. So I became an advocate, working to ensure anyone who needed cannabis medically or chooses to use cannabis for any reason has access to safe and affordable cannabis products. Over the last 8 years, I've had thousands of conversations about cannabis. One of the conversations that sticks out for me the most was with community leaders in my small town about economic development opportunities that legal cannabis could bring to our community. They were fully supportive, and that was several years ago. See, I sit on my city's planning and zoning board, and as a community, we've struggled to fill our industrial parks with jobs and productive businesses. We have lots that have been empty since 1974. Cannabis legalization is the right thing to do, especially for those disproportionately harmed by prohibition. The opportunities are endless for Minnesota, and Representative Winkler has worked tirelessly to create the best adult use policy in the country. Please vote yes on HF 600. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Kim Bemis. Mr. Bemis?
Yes. So I would like to thank the committee, Commerce Committee, for allowing me the chance to speak. My name is Kim Bemis, and I chair Smart Approaches to Marijuana Minnesota, and, well, we oppose the bill. I would like to address my remarks today to the issues of social equity and the grants program. While I have nothing for or against the grants program, the issue of these programs solving social equity issues is a false flag propagated by the marijuana industry. I am not against the goal of social equity. It is just that as other states have tried this, the reality is that only 2 to 4% of the industry nationwide features African American ownership, while pot shops are disproportionately located in communities of color. Illinois serves as the perfect example for this. Lawmakers there promised to set the standard when it came to social equity in the marijuana industry. In reality, now a year later, there is not a single minority-owned marijuana retailer in the state. As I said, the grants program is okay, but the issue is that a grant is not going to be the same as startup money. Being an entrepreneur myself, it takes a lot of money to start a business. These minority-owned startups will need to get financing, and banks will not finance them because marijuana is still illegal at the federal level. Therefore, private equity is the only way to go. This is where the marijuana industry, and particularly investment bankers, through predatory lending practices, outwit state agencies through shell companies and management agreements and assume ownership. Massachusetts had a law that nobody could own more than three stores, but two investment firms own the majority of 65-plus retail outlets in Massachusetts. So given the results so far nationally, and before you move this legislation forward, please show us a successful model of how legalizing any addictive drug has solved social equity issues. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next testifier is Deshita Doss. I think might still be muted.
Here
we go.
Hi. I do apologize. I'm in a place where my power internet has been challenging, but I wanted to make sure you could still hear me. So again, my name is Deshita Dawson, and I am a former ex-senior executive from Target and a Minnesota resident, formerly. I transitioned into the legal industry as a cannabis patient, and eventually crossed over my strategic leadership skills into the industry as an educator, strategist, and now government regulator. I oversee the legal, medical, and adult use cannabis office for the city of Portland in Oregon, and I'm also the founding chair of the Cannabis Regulators of Color Coalition, or CRCC. We're a coalition of government officials appointed and or selected to lead, manage, and oversee regulatory and policy implementation for legal, medical, and adult use cannabis markets across the United States. We represent California, Massachusetts, Illinois, Oregon, Connecticut, and Oklahoma. And more importantly, as the leading architects of cannabis equity and policy reform in the United States, our goal is really to be a source of information. So I know I only have 2 minutes, and I just want to make sure folks know that we are here to help serve those individuals and legislators and offices that are trying to drive an equity-centered legalization. We support HF 600, and more importantly and specifically, we support the work of Marcus Harkis on the ground. Overall, we are really promised by what we saw in this bill. What I'm going to call out are really very specific things that really address some of what we just heard from the smart approaches to marijuana. We've learned some things in the last 5-10 years that some of us have been regulators, and we want to make sure that we can avoid some of those pitfalls that he mentioned that has put equity at bay. For Article 1.2 through 7, the Cannabis Management Board, acknowledging that there are some amendments that I have not seen yet, I will say that equity-centered regulatory management is required. So I'm happy to see those amendments in social justice, but I also think that we require re-education and competency on the history. Most people put in regulatory office do not understand the science of cannabis, nor do they understand the implications of the racially biased enforcement of cannabis prohibition. So I also believe that, yes.
Your time is up. Can you conclude?
Okay. Well, what I would say is that I will follow up with a memo that outlines some of the adjustments or amendments that could be added to help avoid some of the pitfalls that we ran into in other markets.
Thank you, Ms. Dawson. The next testifier is Ryan Hamilton. Mr. Hamilton.
Good afternoon, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Hamilton, Government Relations Associate for the Minnesota Catholic Conference. We're the public policy voice for the Catholic Church in Minnesota. The church's advocacy in the public arena is aimed at serving as a present voice of human dignity and a voice for the common good. Pope Francis has given us some great guidance on this issue. In 2013, he said, quote, drug addiction is an evil, and with evil, there is no yielding or compromise. In 2014, in an address to the International Drug Enforcement Conference, he reminds us that, quote, attempts, however limited, to legalize so-called recreational drugs are not only highly questionable from a legislative standpoint, but they fail to produce the desired effects, end quote. So House File 600 is a bad bill. It's a bad bill for adolescents. It's bad for our brothers and sisters with substance abuse problems. It's bad for those who use our highways, and it's bad for the common good. A Colorado Department of Public Health report reveals that smoking and vaping are the most popular forms of cannabis consumption. It baffles me that the legislature is trying to propagate a new smoking industry during a respiratory pandemic. This is an attempt to create another Big Tobacco. Don't take my word for it. Look at the outcomes in the other states that have gone down this path. For example, a recent study from California, a study of 7th, 9th, and 11th graders, found significant increases in use amongst all demographics. Pope Francis has also stated that, quote, it is necessary to confront the problems underlying the use of these drugs by promoting greater justice, educating people in the values that build up life in society, and accompanying those in difficulty and giving them hope in the future. You know, we believe reconciliation for disparate marijuana enforcement should be discussed, but as a separate bill. It is unfortunate that bipartisan concerns about racial justice are being used as a cover to prop up a commercial drug industry. Let's work for justice without sanctioning a marijuana business that has been proven to prey on adolescents.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton. The next testifier is Marcus Harkis. Mr. Harkis.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Marcus Harkis. I'm a family man. I'm a writer, organizer, social entrepreneur from North Minneapolis. I'm the director of the Campaign for Full Legalization. I've studied the history of cannabis prohibition and the emerging legal cannabis industry since 2014, when Colorado and Washington State implemented the nation's first adult use cannabis market. As a Black cannabis consumer for the past 22 years, I can tell you that prohibition is the problem. It's not cannabis. Cannabis is a healing plant, not a dangerous drug. The most dangerous thing about cannabis is getting caught with it. Prohibitionists will argue that legalization will cause the sky to fall, but it has not. Even with the inequitably regulated, overly taxed legalization models, free states are respecting personal freedom, increasing public safety, improving public health, creating economic development, and advancing social justice by ending the senseless criminalization of cannabis consumers. There's not one honest reason to justify prohibition, which has failed to prevent the billion-dollar illicit market that currently serves nearly 700,000 adult cannabis consumers today. The only way to displace the illicit market is to allow the emerging legal market to work well for both entrepreneurs and consumers. House Bill 600 does well in proposing a craft market that will create thousands of businesses, tens of thousands of jobs, and provide a wide variety of safe products for consumers to enjoy. We are learning from the best practices and mistakes of the forerunning cannabis free state. This bill has the potential to establish the best model of full legalization in the United States, one that intentionally redresses the wrongs of the failed and structurally racist drug war with equitable regulation by the Cannabis Management Board and the Office for Social Equity. Please vote to advance this smart bill. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Julie Engel. Ms. Engel.
Hi, thank you for your time. My name is Julie Engel. I am 39 years old. I have three adorable young boys, and I live in Minnetonka. For 4.5 years, I was very sick with mystery symptoms. They included chronic pain, debilitating fatigue, and brain fog. It was like having the flu, but it would last for months on end. As a very active young mom, I was not available for my family or kids during this difficult time in my life. I was more focused on when my next doctor's appointments were going to be, what were my traditional doctors going to put me on now, what were the side effects of all of these drugs, which alternative doctor was I going to see next, or which diet was I going to try? Most importantly, how am I going to get healthy so I can live my life and be the mom that I used to be? I had a gut feeling my pharmaceutical drugs were making me sick, so I made a brave decision to go off of all of them and start incorporating cannabis into my daily regimen. That was the best decision I've made in my life. For me, cannabis has been a gateway to a better life. I microdose every morning so that my body is calm without being high. I consume high THC at night before I go to bed so I can sleep through the night. I consume responsibly, and it has allowed me to be functional. Because cannabis literally gave me my life back, I became obsessed with the plant and the industry. I've spent the last 3 years fully immersing myself, going to conferences all over the United States, doing a lot of market research and networking with some fantastic cannabis professionals. After a lot of analysis and study, I have formed an LLC and want to move forward as a female entrepreneur in the cannabis industry in Minnesota. I see how the path to full adult legalization could benefit our communities by providing more resources, tools, access to the plant, jobs, and economic growth. I want so badly to let people know that there are alternatives to modern day medicine. I have a strong desire to give back to the community. And lastly, I want to break the stigma that is associated with cannabis usage. Thank you for your time and for listening to my story.
Thank you. The next testifier is Carol Moss. Ms. Moss.
Thank you. House Chair and Representatives, my name is Carol Moss. I'm a resident of House District 45B. I am a partner of the law firm Helmuth & Johnson & Dina, and I sit on the board for the National Association of Women Business Owners, Minnesota chapter. I come before you to speak on behalf of House File 600 in support of it. As an attorney representing businesses in many different industries, I can tell you that Minnesota businesses have a strong appetite for innovation and growth. I am continuously impressed and inspired by Minnesota's entrepreneurs. These entrepreneurs are an asset to our state and are looking to you, the legislature, to legalize adult use cannabis so that they may proceed with starting or growing their cannabis businesses. Minnesota is in a unique position. We can learn from other states that have legalized adult use cannabis as to what works and how to avoid their pitfalls. In addition, and more importantly, we can use this opportunity to create an industry that is inclusive, an industry in which women and minority-owned businesses are at the forefront of the industry and are not playing catch-up. We rarely give an opportunity to ensure that new industry is formed in a manner in which we can have a diverse pool of entrepreneurs. In the past month, I've been contacted by numerous individuals and established businesses who are interested in becoming involved in the cannabis industry if adult use is legalized. These inquiries run the gamut of entrepreneurs from first-time business owners to seasoned veterans. Each one has inquired how to work within Minnesota laws to ensure their business operates correctly and responsibly. And I am struck by the testimony of Mr. Carter and Ms. Engel, as their stories are not uncommon. Our state is deep with people like with stories like them. So with that, I ask that you support House File 600, and I appreciate your time and your consideration today.
Thank you. The next testifier is Angela Lesperance. I apologize Lesperance. For that.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Angela Lesperance. I'm a tax accountant and an entrepreneur. I am in support of House File 600 for a few reasons. For starters, I have celiac disease, which has over 300 symptoms associated with it. The Mayo Clinic here in Minnesota completed a study that proves that THC in cannabis helps protect a celiac's body from the damage gluten causes. So legally in Minnesota, I cannot get medical cannabis in the state because Minnesota does not consider my autoimmune disease a qualified ailment. Some of the major symptoms of celiac disease include extreme gut pain, inability to absorb nutrients, weight loss, foggy brain, migraines, and insomnia, which all dramatically affect my quality of life and ability to work. Legalizing adult use in Minnesota will give me access to the regulated cannabis that my body needs to be healthy. This is just one example of where cannabis can be used for medicine, but is not readily available. Another reason is legalizing will help boost the economy. Cannabis has no doubt thrived during COVID. We are currently losing revenue to the illicit market and to other states that have legalized. Illinois made about $580 million in net revenue in the first year. California brought in $345 million, and Colorado brought in $250 million in tax revenue in 2020. We also have the opportunity to restore justice in Black and brown communities that have been negatively impacted by the war on drugs. Illinois is currently sitting on $62 million that is earmarked for helping minority businesses and neighborhood development. In the past couple of years, we have witnessed how unjust our country is. Legalizing cannabis can help pave the road to restorative justice, which can help heal our underrepresented communities that have been severely damaged by the war on drugs. There are 15 states that have legalized and that we can look to for guidance. We can learn from the good and the bad. With the right policies in place and the right people in mind, I strongly believe that we can succeed and benefit from legalizing cannabis for adult use. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Aaron Peterson. Mr. Peterson. Mr. Peterson, if you are talking, you are muted. We will move on to the next testifier, who is Jeremy Sankey. Mr. Sankey. Now we have Mr. Peterson. Mr. Peterson, you may proceed.
All right. My name is Aaron.
Oh, you're muted again, Mr. Peterson. There we go.
All right. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'd like to thank the committee for including me today in this conversation.
Mr. Peterson, we're having a number of audio difficulties there. I'm going to ask you to suspend for a moment, mute, and talk to the committee administrator, maybe in the chat. Maybe we can get you squared away and come back to you. The next testifier is Jeremy Sankey. Mr. Sankey.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here. My name is Jeremy Sankey, as you said, founder of the Minnesota Veterans for Cannabis. The reason why I started using cannabis and eventually got into the advocacy side of it is from 2004 to 2015, I swallowed almost 100,000 pills. 100,000 seems like a lot, but the real number involved in that is zero. And that's what I paid for them. Through the VA, I didn't pay for any of those pills. But to get medical cannabis on a monthly basis is several hundred dollars. And that's something that should not be happening to veterans. That's something that should not be happening to low-income individuals. When you think about it, people they go to Walgreens or CVS and get regular prescriptions, they still maybe only have a $10, $20 copay for a month's worth of medication. It's no secret that legalization of cannabis for adult personal use goes a long way to helping patients on the medical program. A lot of the other things that I was going to say today have already been said, since we have a lot of people left to go. I'll keep this shorter than usual. I just want to thank Representative Winkler for all he's done. As this bill moves through all the various committees, we will continue to work with him, the committees that the bill is going through, other stakeholders on making this bill as good as it can be. Please vote yes on HF 600. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Anthony Newby. Mr. Newby.
Sorry, guys. Thank you to the Commerce Committee. Thank you to the chair. My name is Anthony Newby. I'm the co-owner of a CBD business located downtown Minneapolis. Our brand is sold in over 600 retail stores. We sell online, ship to over 31 states. We're operating in a market very adjacent to the adult use cannabis market. As we all know, hemp and adult use cannabis are similar plants and similar products. I fully support House File 600 and want to speak from the perspective of an owner-operator in an adjacent industry. I entered the business, number one, as an organizer who tracked cannabis policy all over the country. Number two, as someone who's experienced the direct effects of the war on drugs, both in my family and friend group and in my neighborhood of North Minneapolis. And number three, I'm a member of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, and we work on developing equitable cannabis policy throughout the nation, and we're doing our best right here in our backyard in Minnesota. My hope is that House File 600 will have a strong focus on social equity, and atone for the harms inflicted on communities of color by the failed war on drugs. It's in my self-interest, my community's self-interest, in the interest of furthering a new economy and an emerging market. Speaking specifically to the Commerce Committee, number one, from the perspective of my business If we legalize cannabis, we continue to generate jobs downtown Minneapolis in an area that was decimated by events in the last year and a half. We'll work with partners all over the state to shepherd people of color and Black folks and Native folks into the industry, and we'll use our leverage to do exactly that. We'll pay taxes. We'll donate our time and energy to onboarding others into the industry. And I'll work with all of you on the call and on those not on the call to help develop the most equitable and sustainable model in the country. Nationally, we know the industry added 77,000 jobs in the last year despite the COVID pandemic. A workforce of over 320,000 people are now in the cannabis sector or joined the cannabis sector that now outweighs dentists, EMTs, and electrical engineers. It's the fastest growing industry in America. In Minnesota, we know that using Colorado as a market, we can expect to raise some $200 million in year one in tax revenue. We all have ideas how to spend that and build a strong and equitable market. Again, using Colorado as a model.
Up, please.
We have 45,000 jobs that we can expect. Look, this is an opportunity in the age of COVID, political and racial disruption, and economic uncertainty to open the doors to an industry that could grow our local economy and bridge the outrageous racial disparities in our state. And we support it 100%.
Thank you, Mr. Newby. The next, we're going to try Aaron Peterson again. Mr. Peterson?
I'm here. Sorry, I was having some difficulty. My name is Aaron Peterson. Thank you for allowing me to talk today. I am in support of HF 600. And my background is in farming. I come from a family farm in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. We started growing hemp a few years ago, and that was kind of my introduction to some of the politics or the what hemp is and how cannabis in our state could shift. I think one component I see for farming is that small farms can make it in this industry. Connecting with a lot of other growers, it doesn't take big equipment. In fact, big equipment is almost a hindrance for this crop, and it provides opportunity for those that may not be able to enter traditional agriculture to get into a business where they could make it in farming. It's also provides jobs because of the fact that it doesn't need a lot of big machinery. It needs more hand labor. And I see that being a positive thing for jobs in our state, as well as, again, keeping agriculture strong and creating opportunities for those that are getting squeezed out of it. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Unfortunately, we have now reached the end of the time that we can allot to public testimony. So while there are additional people who have signed up to testify today, we're going to have to move on to discussing amendments and discussion. Before I do that, I do just want to note for people who signed up to testify and were unable to do so, you have two additional options. One is you can send in written testimony to the committee. We will keep the record open for 24 hours to accommodate you to send in written testimony. The second is that this bill will be heard in multiple other House committees, and you can always sign up to testify in one of those committees, and hopefully they will be able to accommodate you. The next thing that we will do is consider the amendments that were submitted. There's only one additional amendment. I believe it is Representative O'Driscoll's amendment, the A2. Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A2 amendment to House File 600. And the A2 amendment, I'm hoping, is something that the author to the bill would be open to taking. As a person who's very concerned about products falling into the hands of minors and school children and the like, I've attempted to model the A2 amendment after our liquor laws here in the state of Minnesota that prohibit the sales, distribution, et cetera, of products within the proximity of elementary schools, high schools, middle schools. I've also included daycares and nursing homes and some other facilities. My concerns are that the sale and distribution manufacture of those. I was very surprised. Well, let me step back on this. I was very surprised at the time when I offered this amendment, at the time that we were talking about medical marijuana, that no one seemed to be concerned about this could actually be done next to an elementary school. And so I want to make sure that if we go on a large-scale basis in the state of Minnesota on this, that this amendment is on the bill to protect the school students, the teachers, others in the area. And Representative Winkler and I have worked together on a number of bills. I know he knows that this is a common-sense approach to working on this. And so I'm generally assuming that this is going to be a welcome amendment to his bill that I'm offering here today. And one of the things that Jesse James has always asked, why did you rob the banks, Jesse? And he said, because that's where the money is. And that's the same thing that I think could happen if we don't have some thought out parameters around where the location of the sale and distribution and manufacture, horticulture, et cetera, of this product would be. So members, I would encourage a yes vote.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, I'm going to give you a fairly long answer. So I think it's important to understand how cannabis would be regulated in Minnesota in this bill. We create a cannabis management board responsible for distributing licenses to cultivators, manufacturers, distributors, and retailers. We do not permit any local government unit to opt out of the cannabis marketplace, and we do not provide for local licensing. We do, however, permit local units of government to use the same kind of time, place, and manner ordinances for zoning the businesses related to cannabis as they would for any other business. So local units of government can create rules exactly like this amendment would require to limit the location of where cannabis facilities would be located. The difference is that but the only restriction on that is that local units of government cannot create restrictions that would have the effect of prohibiting cannabis in their jurisdiction. I want to just explain why that's so important. Among the primary policy goals of any good cannabis bill is to try to eliminate the illegal marketplace. The illegal marketplace has a whole range of problems with it. Customers or consumers don't know what they're getting. We end up having associated crimes related to an illegal marketplace that we don't have in a regulated legal marketplace. And the whole goal is to shift away from the system that we have today into a safe, regulated marketplace. If we allow local jurisdictions to effectively create a patchwork across the state, we end up leaving in place an extensive illegal marketplace. And we undermine one of the basic goals of this bill. And while tax policy is not part of this bill, we are careful to not overtax the product, and we are careful about not creating regulatory burdens that are too difficult to meet in order to get into the industry, because we're trying to create a migration. So we set up the state and local different regulatory structure in this bill in this way so as to prevent a patchwork, which would then end up leaving an illegal marketplace intact. And that has had significant consequences in states like Colorado, where you ended up having significant illegal grow operations in counties that had opted out in order to meet needs in other places. It just created a real problem. And so we don't want opt-outs. We do want local governments to have the ability to make reasonable restrictions, including a 1,000-foot limit like this amendment maintains. So I think the amendment is unnecessary because local units of government will have the power to do this very thing. In addition, the one-size kind of fits-all approach by saying it should be 1,000 feet, we don't know what effect that will have based on local conditions. So, Representative O'Driscoll, I think this has been well considered. We've discussed it extensively and learned lessons from other states. My request is that you and I work together to make sure that we allow local units of government to make these decisions in a way that best fits their local community. We could potentially create language in the bill to explicitly permit them to establish distance limits of the kind that you're describing. But I think having a statewide blanket approach like this would have consequences that we don't quite understand. And frankly, I think it would be better if we discussed this in the state government and local government committees where this bill will stop. So if you'd be open to it, I would make my personal commitment, Representative O'Driscoll, to work with you to address this concern. I think it's legitimate and fair, and to try to make the bill work, and then we can try to put together an amendment together that we could adopt in another committee that would work better.
And representatives, before I call on you, I know some members are having difficulty finding the A2, and they should check their emails, since I've asked the committee administrator to email that out to all members. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, you and I do agree on one thing. That was a very long answer to my amendment in response to that. Unfortunately, this will be the only stop that I will have in committees. And I know this committee has, this bill has a lot of stops along the way. The state government finance, I have served on that in the past. What I would like to do is I would like to have this amendment on so that it stays a part of the bill and that we don't lose track of this very important public safety issue for children that are in daycare. A lot of Minnesotans right now are preoccupied with COVID and getting their children back to school and other kinds of things. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to have this on as a way to have you remember the importance of this. And I'd certainly be open to a conversation with you, Representative Winkler, but I feel that strongly since this is my only chance to be able to take care of a very big concern. And Representative Winkler, this is the only amendment that we are offering right now. From the committee on either the Republican or the Democrat side for or against on the bill. I don't think it's an unreasonable request to take this. And Mr. Chair, I would like to ask Representative Winkler if he would be willing to take this today as an amendment for that purpose.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I would accept the amendment essentially as a placeholder. I would expect down the road to offer an author's amendment that more finely tunes this to fit the other regulatory structures in the bill, and I'd be happy to talk with you about that. But if you'd like to put it on today as a starting point for discussion, I'm comfortable with that. I would point out, and I think you raise fair points, even if a retail operation were near a high school for distribution of cannabis, it would still be better than what we have today, which is that distribution occurs in the high school. The point here is that we are actually shifting from cannabis being everywhere to being in places in the community where we know where it is and it's regulated. So I think you raise an important issue. I think it requires some further thought. We can put the amendment on if you'd like, and we will work on it in a subsequent committee stop.
Well, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winkler, you certainly have my contact information and know how to get a hold of me. We have worked on other issues together over the years, and I do feel strongly that we need to have this on. Did I believe that this was the exact language? No, it is an idea to have you have something to remember what's important to the members of this committee and public safety and taking care of folks that we don't have any unintended consequences. So thank you for your willingness to take the amendment today, Representative Winkler.
Further discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. There are no other amendments that we have to consider, so the balance of the hearing will be for member discussion of the bill. Any discussion to the bill? Representative Katiza Watune.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winkler, I just kind of taken a peek at what lies in the jurisdiction of the Commerce Committee, and I was looking at the section on packaging. And I'm not sure if you or maybe one of the testifiers might be able to speak to kind of like the serving sizes. And I was just a little bit curious how those kind of get determined for different products that potentially would be available. Cause as I understand it, cannabis can impact different people differently, and so kind of what is the basis of a serving size, and then kind of how that might affect the packaging and the directions of usage.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Katiza Watune, you raised a good question. And we do have Ben Johnson from House Research, who essentially quarterbacked drafting of this bill over a period of a year plus. And so he can answer specific detailed questions you might have, but essentially we set a dosage standard, or not a dosage standard, but a serving standard in the bill that is based on what other states have used. It is admittedly a bit arbitrary because the level of absorption use of THC varies depending on how your body deals with it, with a lot of factors. But it's pretty much becoming a standard across states. And so we adopted that thinking that standard was as good as any, given that it's essentially arbitrary in nature.
Representative Katiza Watune.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question's for the author. I guess I don't know if this actually works in our committee or not, but I'm going to ask it anyway. The federal government still has marijuana listed as a Schedule I drug. And as a Schedule I drug that allows the DEA to have access to bank accounts, and I know Colorado has had some trouble with this, do you foresee any problems with the federal government coming back, or do you have some insight into maybe moving the federal government, maybe looking at moving this to a Schedule II drug where that would not, the currency, the banking situation would not be a problem? Could you just address some of those concerns for me between Schedule I, Schedule II, and the banking, please?
I think that's an excellent question for this committee. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure as Commerce Committee Chair, you think every committee item would be fit under your jurisdiction. But Representative Barr, so yes, we have a situation in the United States in which the federal government essentially says that cannabis is illegal for all purposes. They put it in Schedule I, which means that they think it is has no benefit and is as dangerous as heroin. Somewhere between old way of thinking and deliberately criminalizing large groups of people, depending on how you look at the history of cannabis laws in the U.S. So rescheduling is something that absolutely should happen at the federal level. The U.S. House passed a bill in December that did just exactly that. I don't know what status that would have in the U.S. Senate at this point in time. It's a new Congress. But certainly support for rescheduling or descheduling cannabis at the federal level is growing and is bipartisan. The way that this has functioned is that states have legalized, and successive presidential administrations, both Democrat and Republican, have essentially decided to not enforce, using prosecutorial discretion, to not enforce federal cannabis laws in states where it is illegal. The DEA is still active in helping to prevent the export of cannabis from legal states to states where it's illegal. For the most part, there's been a common agreement not to enforce it. On the banking side, startup in some of the early states was a cash-based economy. There was a lot of concern about a cash-based economy and theft and violent crime and other things associated with it. That has really evolved and matured in more recent years. We met with former district attorney from Boulder, Colorado last year, as well as the former chief of staff to the governor of Colorado as they implemented the cannabis laws there. And they, based on their data, something like 80% of the funds flowing through the cannabis industry in Colorado are now going through banks. So banks have figured out a way essentially to move the money through the financial system. They take some risk on in doing so because they have to report high-risk activity to federal regulators, and that can be expensive. But as long as they are reporting it, it's not illegal. So banks can find a way to do it and are doing so. And I think in Minnesota and across states, trade groups are figuring out how to adapt their business practices to this weird situation in which states have legalized the product and the federal government is essentially turning the other way.
Any follow-up, Representative Barr?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I might have other questions later, but thank you.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of questions for Representative Winkler. And the first is, I'm sure Representative Winkler, as most of us have had over the last couple of years, young people come into our offices from the, what's it officially called, the Minnesota's for a Smoke-Free Generation, advocating raising tobacco out of 21, and there's other initiatives that they've been pushing. I'm just wondering if the majority leader has had the opportunity to get feedback from this group and what the Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation might think of legalizing pot in Minnesota.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucero, off the top of my head, I can't remember specifically that group, Certainly, we have been in touch with organizations concerned about tobacco use. I think what's important to recognize is that we are not talking about a situation in which there is no cannabis smoked in Minnesota, and if we pass this bill, cannabis will be smoked freely everywhere in Minnesota. It's extensively used today, and we use a criminal justice approach to addressing it and educating people in a way that has entirely failed. So I think it is it's consistent with the goal of getting young people away from inhaling anything to pass this bill, because we establish a 21-year-old minimum age. We actually will know where the cannabis is in our communities, where it's coming from, and have the ability to enforce it. And what we've seen, at least in Colorado, is an actual decline in use of cannabis by teens and adolescents as after legalization. Now, the data is a little bit mixed, and you can, different groups will pull all kinds of information together. But according to the Colorado Department of Health, they've seen a slight decline in use. So I think it's consistent. It's also safer. If you think about vaping and in a legal marketplace where people are able to, are forced to essentially use illegal, unregulated products to vape, we've seen a huge crisis. The crisis isn't the cannabis consumption. The crisis is an illegal marketplace where people don't know what they're getting. So I think for all kinds of reasons, this bill actually does a better job of regulating cannabis use for youth and helps provide the education and control over the product that we currently lack today.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And next question would be, so I have worked in several industries that have or require professional licensing, as I do now. And just using one example off the top of my head, back when I was a commercial truck driver, presently, I'm trying to think, for a cell phone. Cell phone in Minnesota, I believe we allow hands-free, but when it comes to commercial truck driving, as Representative Barr could testify, you're not allowed to use it at all because federal law has a more strict regulation on that. So when it comes to this, when it comes to smoking joints in Minnesota, are there industries, will there potentially be cases where you have employers or professions whereby it's conflicting them with federal law explicitly and might jeopardize either the employees or the licensing of the employer? If they permit, could they be in a scenario where it's permitted under Minnesota law, but getting high in it would put them in jeopardy of some federal regulation or licensing?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucero. So first of all, cannabis can be consumed in a lot of ways without smoking a joint, quote unquote, or getting high, quote unquote. There's a lot of ways in which it's consumed in very different ways. To your question, for the example of the U.S. Department of Transportation regulations, they supersede or preempt Minnesota law on those workplace requirements. So we would not change that. Any place where there is a federal law on workplace regulation that preempts state law, we do not and cannot change it. And in fact, the same kind of detente with the federal government on cannabis laws on the criminal side does not apply on the regulatory side like transportation. For the general workplace where we don't have federal workplace requirements in place, we change Minnesota law so that cannabis is a legal substance to use. That means you can have cannabis in your system if you are employed, or if you go to work, in the same way that you could have alcohol in your system if you go to work. But like alcohol, you have no right to be impaired on the job. You can't show up drunk to work. You can't show up stoned to work if that is a workplace rule and we don't change that. The only thing that we do would end up effectively changing is you can't screen people out based on having some level of cannabis in their system unless it's a federal requirement or there's a safety standard in place that relates to impairment.
And before I turn it back over to Lucero, I just note that we did just have another Eric Lucero job noted on the record there, commercial truck drivers. So we can add that to the list. In fact, I received several text messages from people watching the hearing who noted that. So thank you for that. That's our Eric Lucero job of the day. Eric, Representative Lucero.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that note, I should actually say what got me into commercial truck driving was I was a school bus driver and got my Class B prior to getting my Class A.
It's a two-way.
Really that was my entry. So anyway, train of thought. And so the majority leader, I have a comment and then I'll have one last question. My question is for the majority leader, being impaired. So when it comes to alcohol, obviously we know that the impairment creates problems when driving, just as one example. And I'm not familiar with marijuana, so I don't know. Is there testing out there that would allow for, or I guess I should ask the question first. Can, if a person smokes a certain level or consumes marijuana, can they be impaired to the point where they can't drive? I honestly don't know the answer to that. And if that is a true statement, if that is possible, does testing presently exist whereby if there's a suspected person that's impaired and operating a vehicle, that like a roadside, like a breathalyzer, can take a test and in real time get an answer if they've if they are indeed impaired? That's my question. But then, Mr. Chair, I'll just finish up with my comment, and then you don't need to come back to me after the majority leader answers. And that is, the majority leader did bring up a good point, and I will emphasize, I am 100% a believer that marijuana has very positive and beneficial medical purposes. I am also one who's a strong advocate of allowing for medical marijuana and consumption in the multiple ways that it can be used, such as oils, orally taken, you know, and the multitude of other products. I'm a strong believer in that. And I'm also, I just want to say for the record, very much interested in our current licensing or the model that we have in Minnesota that allows for medical marijuana, exploring opportunities to change what's currently on the books to allow for a cheaper cost, to allow getting some of the regulatory burden out of the way, because I do believe that that is something that we should do. But going in terms of as far as recreational marijuana, again, I still have reservations on that. But again, I very much appreciate the efforts that have been done in the past, because there are people that do benefit medically from marijuana. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Majority Leader.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Lucero, the data on impairment and cannabis concentrations in the body is really all over the map. The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration has data from around the world showing everything from cannabis being very dangerous to cannabis providing a slight benefit for driving safety. And the reality is that there is very little correlation between THC concentration in your body and your level of impairment. So it's important not to reason by analogy and think that because it works this way for alcohol, it therefore must work this way for cannabis. Alcohol is unusual in the sense that there is a very high correlation between the blood alcohol content of an individual and their level of impairment. And it's because those two things are so closely related that we use things like a breathalyzer or a blood alcohol tests of various kinds, because we know that there's a strong connection. For cannabis, the test is not how much is in you. The test is how impaired are you. In the same way that we would use that test if you were using legal pharmaceutical painkillers, or if you were impaired because you're exhausted or for any other reason. So what we do in this bill to address impairment is to use resources to fund drug recognition training for law enforcement on the highways, especially so that they actually are better able to determine whether people are impaired based on objective criteria rather than on how much THC is in their system.
So members, we do have 12 minutes left in the hearing, and I'm four members on the list, and I'm guessing Representative Winkler might have one or two things to say at the very end. So just be mindful of the time, please, and Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winkler, I'm not going to cover some other ground that's already in the interest of time, but I would just kind of highlight CDL drivers. We have a law that would be an intrastate law with the cannabis use. What happens if someone were to go across state lines? And then you've addressed the fact that the preemption because of the federal laws and other state laws. And we're opening up another whole group of people here to unintended consequences. If you happen to be a driver from Minnesota moving to another state, hauling a load for hire, you put the the employer at jeopardy of losing the CDL and the employer being fined potentially on that as well, depending upon the state laws. But one of the things I want to compliment you on Representative Winkler is you have amply pointed out that this does not have to be an inhalant that needs to be for the use of cannabis in your bill. It seems to me that I have been around this institution long enough to know that we've had members on your side of the aisle who have been very, very instrumental in raising the issue of vaping, the idea of flavored tobaccos or flavored tobacco substitutes and the like. And you and I both know that if this is allowed to happen, that you could take this in a candy form, right? For the size of a mint or something like that, or other hard candy where this could be put in. And if you put in a very nice bag and maybe have on there a cotton candy for people, although it's not really targeted at the youth, it's targeted at adults, different kinds of flavors and putting animated features and figures on there. The very same things that for the last few sessions we've been trying to fight against. When I say we, it's been the position of the majority to fight against those kinds of things. Recently, there's been a recommendation about banning menthol cigarettes. But is there a provision in your bill to prevent flavored use of cannabis?
Representative Winkler.
And if not, why not? And if so, why so?
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll. So we have extensive restrictions on product packaging, extensive restrictions on advertisement targeting people under the age of 21 and using product formations that would appeal to people under the age of 21. So you raise a number of points in your question, many of which are, I think, pretty well addressed in the bill. In fact, it's one of the lessons learned in Colorado. They didn't initially anticipate that you could potentially have kids finding gummy bears in their family's home and thinking that they were just candy and using them. Well, they realized that was a problem. They prohibited it, just like this bill prohibits it. I'm not aware of flavors being a particular issue with respect to cannabis, but I am open to addressing that concern. We don't currently deal with it in this bill. But as we move to a health committee, I think would be a good place to consider that issue. I'm very open to addressing it. And I know that the people who worked so long to resist and prohibition of this product recognize that youth, kids, and cannabis are not a good combination. In fact, cannabis has harms beyond that, including exacerbating certain psychological conditions. And I am in favor of an effective regulatory structure to keep cannabis away from kids and to, so that we know where it is and what it's doing and people are consuming it because they make an informed choice to do so. That's the whole goal of this bill. So I'd be very happy to work on the issue of flavors. I don't know how it applies here specifically, but as we approach a health committee stop, I'm very open to figuring that out with you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Oh, Mr. Chair, this will be my last question. I think we have a couple of other members that want to speak. But Representative Winkler, it's not a far reach. It is absolutely not a far reach to raise the question in this committee about flavored use of cannabis. As the regulations went down on the tobacco industry, they found other ways to be able to do it. And your side is very ample and very, very skilled at pointing out those kinds of issues. I'm simply raising the issue for you so that when it comes, you're not surprised that you might have been involved in creating the issue that you are at some point in the future going to want to resolve. So that's my comments, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Leader Winkler. I'm very much been following this issue all along. It's been a big issue for the state and beyond. The social justice issues, of course, are huge. That's not related to this. I'm very following the medical issues and the interest. We all know the benefits. I can't believe how effective that's been with what we did a couple of years ago by helping. We heard testimony earlier about that, but the cost is crazy. But this, you know, this is a Commerce Committee, and this it totally fits in the Commerce Committee. You know, as a state, we've we look after the liquor issues, and this is right in that same thing. Some of the testimony we've heard today, you know, the words like weed and high and joint, to me that I'm not really in that place. I just think it's sad that we still talk about that. This is a very serious issue. We heard that in the testimony, and having a legal and safe marketplace, That's where it's got to be. And that's for the best of Minnesota, and that's clear. That's not a partisan issue. I love, you know, South Dakota. That's so clear what they showed. And we can do this right. Thank you for your leadership. And it's definitely where the Minnesota citizens are at, and they want us to do the right thing on this. Thank you.
Representative Katisa Mattoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Leader Winkler, I just wanted to thank you for your work on this. I appreciate all the conversation and questions today. This obviously has really a broad coalition of stakeholders and advocates. Back in 2019, I did co-host one of those Be Heard on Cannabis Town Halls in Eden Prairie, and we had over 100 attendees that night. Largely, the feedback was really positive. And so over the past couple years, I've had multiple conversations about cannabis with constituents. And over the last week, I decided to just do a simple survey, and I've been getting responses to that survey throughout the hearing today. So I just did want to share two brief data points. The split of support versus opposed is like 88% to 11%, which is a couple of people undecided. And over three quarters of respondents consider that criminal justice and racial justice perspective as one of the top priorities to be addressed should this issue and this proposal move forward. Well, I still have hesitations about the legalization of cannabis. I appreciate the insights and experiences of all the testifiers today. And I know that the majority of my constituents are in support of at least considering this proposal in a number of different committees so that we can get really clear on all the impacts of the lives of Minnesotans. And I'm just glad to be a part of the conversation. Thank you.
So we have three members left and 4 minutes. So please try and keep your remarks confined to that time frame. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Majority Leader, for your presentation today. I just wanted to voice my concerns. I represent rural Minnesota. We are a manufacturing center in my community, and I actually participated with our Chamber of Commerce and our Manufacturing Association last summer in a forum where we discussed cannabis, and we had the director of the statewide medical cannabis program present. And it was one of our most highly attended events. And the major concern that our manufacturers have is related to all the uncertainty and just the lack of clear definition on how to treat this in the workplace. We have more jobs in manufacturing available all over the state than we have people looking for those jobs. And one of the things we hear from folks is, if they can get folks in to apply, one of the challenges they have is drug addiction. People can't stay on the job, or they don't pass the drug test to get the job in the first place. So I have a concern about legalizing another drug and, you know, putting that into the complexity of our workforce shortage that we already see across the state today. And I also have concern about legalizing this at a time when our primary focus, in my opinion, should be getting our businesses back fully open, getting our economy fully recovered from COVID, and supporting our businesses, large and small, in that effort, versus adding a new drug to the mix, new regulations, new procedures. There are already so many mandates that the majority party is moving through the legislature this year. That will impact businesses. So again, my concerns are for our workforce shortage and that this wouldn't help that, and the additional complexity that our manufacturers would see when so many of the issues around legalizing marijuana really haven't been fully vetted as it would affect the workforce. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I see no more members seeking recognition. So before I turn it over to Representative Winkler for closing comments, I will just say that I really commend you, Representative Winkler, for all of the work that you have done to bring this bill to us today. And I just have to comment that you've gone so far above and beyond the call of duty on any bill. I think there's been more stakeholder engagement, community involvement, development, discussions, more people involved in shaping this bill than any that I can ever think of that's been before the legislature. And that's really remarkable. The people of Minnesota should be really proud of the way that you have approached this issue and the work product that's been developed because of it. And, you know, when I talk to people in my community about their concerns, you know, the ones that stick out to me are the people who are really suffering, right? The people who are experiencing pain, the people who are having a hard time in the criminal justice system. And this is a chance to really do a lot of good
for those people to move Minnesota in the right direction. And although this isn't the Public Safety Committee, as a working prosecutor, I can't help but comment that I think it's the right direction to take to make Minnesotans more safe, as we're able to focus our public safety resources on more urgent threats than cannabis. So I really commend you for it. I'm looking forward to voting for it. And do you have any closing comments before we move to a vote, Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief since I don't want to time out on my vote. Representative Haley, I think you raised important concerns about the workplace. We've extensively gone through them. I'm more than happy to talk through in greater detail how we address those concerns. And we've met with the state chamber. We've met with other business groups. I'm happy to meet with anybody to talk about this and get it right, because the concerns are real. But this is a business opportunity. This is a growth industry, and it really represents for all parts of the state an opportunity to shift from an illegal criminal justice approach that hurts a lot of people and does no good to address the concerns that people have about cannabis, and move to a system where we can actually address the real concerns, create opportunity, and right some past wrongs. And so for those reasons, Mr. Chair, I ask the committee to support your motion and move this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. I renew my motion that House File 600, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy. And Mr. Brown will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Cattizzo-Attune.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Daphne.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
No.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly. Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
No.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Tice. And I'll call again Representative Lilly.
Sorry, aye.
And Representative Tice.
No.
There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 600 is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy. Thank you, Representative Winkler, and the committee will adjourn for the day as we have no further business. Thank you.